The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com. The Trump admin isn't a deviation from American history. Just ask indigenous people. This article was written by Joseph Lee on July 4th. This year, many Americans might be feeling less patriotic than usual on the 4th of July. During a time usually marked by fireworks, parades, and barbecues, people across the country are grappling with increasing attacks on civil liberties, science, and essential government programs. A couple months ago, I received an email newsletter in my inbox with the subject line, "The End of America as We Know It." But what is the America we know? In school, we are taught that America was founded with lofty visions of equality and has steadily worked to accomplish them, even if it hasn't always been perfect. But when you look at the broad arc of American history, it's the moments of progress that feel like an anomaly, not individual leaders. In other words, the Trump administration's assaults are not a deviation, but essentially a more extreme version of the same old American story. Just ask indigenous people. The dismay and anxiety that many white Americans are feeling this summer is nothing new for us. I am Aquina Wampanoag and grew up spending summers on our homelands, which happened to be on Martha's Vineyard, a popular and pricey vacation destination. Over the years, we have steadily lost our land to racist systems and tourism. As the island grows increasingly hard to afford, we have to fight harder to protect our community, land, and culture. Every summer, the extra influx of visitors on the 4th of July is a reminder of how much we have lost. The 4th of July is not just a symbolic insult for many indigenous people. Our history with the day goes back to the very beginning. The Declaration of Independence itself cites King George III's support of merciless Indian savages as one of the many grievances the colonies had against him. In other words, indigenous existence was always seen as a threat to the United States, and the country has never really deviated from that path. Look back through American history at some of the leaders known for pushing the United States toward equality, and you'll find Native rights are often ignored. In 1862, 38 Dakota men were hanged in Minnesota on President Abraham Lincoln's orders, in what remains the largest mass extinction in the United States history. Earlier that year, Lincoln had signed the Homestead Act, which opened up millions of acres of indigenous land to settlers. After the Civil War, Lincoln didn't order the execution of any Confederate generals or leaders. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the liberal Supreme Court justice hero, was notorious in Indian country for the rulings she authored against tribal sovereignty and indigenous interests, although this trend shifted her decisions towards the end of her career. Some believe her mixed record on indigenous rights stemmed from the fact that she, like a number of other justices, simply wasn't familiar with the complexities of Indian law. And if we look more recently, in late 2016, during the last few months of the Obama administration, private security forces used attack dogs, tear gas, and water cannons on peaceful demonstrators at the indigenous-led Dakota Access Pipeline protests. The National Guard was also called in to assist. Much of this happened before many Americans thought Trump stood any chance of becoming president. These examples are symptoms of a system, not any one president. If this sounds like a dismal view of American history, it is because American history is dismal. To understand and meet the moment we are in, we have to understand that history. A lot of people are calling for a return to normalcy, but that means returning to a country where the life expectancy for American Indians and Alaska Natives was more than 10 years less than that of non-Hispanic white people as of 2021. That is a legacy built by an entire country. The solution is not returning to some mythical state of pre-Trump administration American equality, but actually understanding and fixing what is broken. Environmental degradation is not new. Civil rights violations are not new. Anti-immigrant hate is not new. Equality has never been baked into American identity. It is something that has been fought for tooth and nail. Every ounce of progress has been the result of years of organizing, fighting, and commitment. In his book, No Country for Eight Spot Butterflies, Chamorro human rights lawyer and organizer Julian Aguan writes that saving the world requires all of our hands. It would be great folly to think that our ideas, no matter how good, would be enough to reverse the dangerous downward trajectory of our planet. In other words, this is going to take real work. So instead of inviting despair over a country that never was, the 4th of July offers an opportunity to see the work more clearly. That's what indigenous people have been doing for centuries. These are not goals that can live and die by election cycles. They have to be picked up by generation after generation. That means abandoning the struggle to get America to live up to something it never promised to be. If we can free ourselves of that, we might see that there's a path forward, rooted in community and an unwavering commitment to a better future. That's how decades of indigenous advocacy led to the Klamath River dams finally coming down in southern Oregon and northern California, paving the way for salmon, cleaner water, and stronger communities. That's how my tribe is bringing back the Winnipenoag language, which had no speakers for generations, one class at a time. Progress has never happened overnight, but it's worth it every time. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Could AOC be America's youngest president? A Gen Z take on 2028. This article was written by Chloe Cardenas on June 22nd. At 39, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is already the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. By 2028, she'd still be under 40, qualifying her as one of the youngest potential presidents in U.S. history. With Gen Z and millennials projected to make up over 50% of the voter base by then, her age, advocacy, and social media influence surely make her a candidate worth watching out for. Why AOC's youth could be her power move? It's certainly no secret. Younger voters love AOC. Her outsider energy, progressive vision, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, student debt cancellation, and social media fluency have earned her youth and Gen Z appeal. According to Nate Silver of 538, she's currently among the top contenders for the 2028 Democratic nomination. That is, if she chooses to run. A recent Yale Youth poll found she polls second behind Kamala Harris in an early 2028 primary matchup among young voters, according to Newsweek.com. Meanwhile, a Fox News-centered CNN poll found AOC at roughly 10% overall, trailing Harris 28%, TheSun.com. It's clear that Gen Z isn't just scrolling. They're actually engaged. That passion gives AOC fundraising and turnout power. Between her Fighting Oligarchy tour with Bernie Sanders and steady fundraising, she raked in nearly $10 million in early 2025 alone. 2. Not just a hashtag, the rallying effect. AOC isn't just tweeting, though. You've probably noticed the clips or memes. Massive crowds chanting, hands in the air. Her Fighting Oligarchy national tour with Bernie drew record-sized crowds in deep red states like Idaho and Utah, not just left-leaning regions. That virality matters. The kind of momentum Bernie Sanders built with young voters was also key to Obama's grassroots success. And AOC taps into a similar force. Commentators, including Mark Cuban and Vanity Fair, have pointed out her unique ability to blend policy with widespread cultural appeal. She's able to remind people that politics can be their thing and not just a stale institution. 3. But what are the drawbacks? Of course, all of this comes with baggage. Some critics even say her progressive platform is too liberal for swing states. Political scientist Thomas Whalen said she has as much chance as the Las Vegas Raiders winning the Super Bowl, noting that swing state voters aren't ready for full-fledged progressivism. More moderate media voices advise toning down her message. One article by The Fulcrum challenges her to embrace more neutral stances to gain broader appeal and learn from LBJ and Lamar's "don't get too far ahead of your voters" wisdom. And yes, Republicans are already warning that AOC could be the stuff of nightmares, with current GOP leaders like J.D. Vance making her a major subject of criticism. 4. Can she appeal to more than just left-leaners? Gen Z and young voters are half of the electorate, but even there, center and rural voters still hold sway in swing states, such as Georgia, Florida, and Pennsylvania. AOC's challenge is to move beyond Bernie-esque liberal strongholds and show more moderate voters that she has more to offer than just slogans and labels. Her team will need to craft messages that linger on pocketbook issues like cost of living, health care, and jobs. She already preaches that, but messaging needs nuance, not radicalism. That's why her grassroots movement emphasizes storytelling. You matter. I'm going to work for working families. 5. So, is she running? As of mid-June 2025, AOC hasn't officially declared. Newsweek reported she's still weighing options, ranging from a 2028 presidential bid to a 2028 Senate run against Chuck Schumer. A recent poll found she'd beat Schumer by 21 points among NYC Democrats, reinforcing her popularity among the progressive base. But a Senate chase might be more practical. It builds credibility without immediate national pressure. And she continues to leverage her Courage to Change PAC to build progressive infrastructure. 6. What Gen Z should be asking and demanding. Gen Z should ask whether AOC is able to truly connect and resonate with both suburban voters and working class communities, and not just excite progressives on places like TikTok or Instagram. Winning takes building common ground, not just disruption. If AOC can evolve without compromising her core values and lead with moral clarity and empathy, she could potentially become a candidate who unites rather than divides or polarizes. AOC is more than just a meme. Her platform has created a movement. If Democrats want a candidate who is pivotal for our generation, she definitely fits. But wise Gen Zers will be searching for evolution. Will she stay unapologetically progressive or move toward a message that truly unites people? It's certainly no secret. Younger voters love AOC. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Who was Harry Styles kissing at Glastonbury 2025? This article was written by Teen Vogue staff on July 1st. The 2025 edition of Glastonbury has truly given us so much. From headline-making performances and Gracie Abrams and Paul Mescal's hard launch to Harry Styles kissing a mystery woman. Over the weekend, you might have noticed multiple videos and reports linking the One Direction alum to a mystery woman. The gossip began after British tabloid The Sun posted a video of Styles kissing an unidentified woman inside a VIP tent at Glastonbury. Here, we break it all down for you. When was Harry Styles at Glastonbury? Though Harry Styles has not been active since he wrapped up his Love On tour in 2023, the star keeps busy frequenting multiple highly publicized events across the world, from the Tokyo Marathon to the election of Pope Leo XIV at the Vatican. So, of course, Glastonbury would be no exception. The famed British festival, which takes place in Pilton'sworthy Farm, often congregates A-listers, and this year, Styles was among the many to make the pilgrimage to Somerset. Styles was spotted on the festival grounds on Saturday, June 28, 2025. He was photographed a few times throughout the day, accompanied by friends, including producer Kid Harpoon and music exec Rob Stringer. Styles reportedly had his 12-second snog on the dance floor of the VIP tent in the early hours of Sunday, just as his festival day was coming to an end, with fans spreading videos over various social media channels trying to find the identity of the person he was kissing. Who is the girl Harry Styles was kissing at Glastonbury 2025? As soon as videos of the kiss went viral, people started speculating about the woman's identity, with some theorizing it could have been fellow British singer Olivia Dean, who has been previously linked to Styles in rumors a few times. However, multiple outlets and tabloids, including People and The Mirror, have since identified the mystery woman kissing Harry Styles at Glastonbury as Ella Kenny. Per reports, Kenny is a 29-year-old graduate of Bournemouth University and works in London as a producer. Unlike many of the women previously linked to Styles, she is a non-celebrity, so her life is private. Who has Harry Styles dated before? Harry Styles is no stranger to speculation about his romantic life. Prior to making headlines for kissing Kenny at Glastonbury, Styles was romantically linked to actor Taylor Russell since 2023, before reports of their split emerged in May 2024. Before that, the singer caused a stir after being spotted smooching model Emily Ratajkowski on the streets of Tokyo in late 2023. Styles also famously dated Olivia Wilde before reportedly splitting in November 2022. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Miley Cyrus says she regrets writing half of album Plastic Hearts. This article was written by Ashley Carter on June 21st. It seems that Miley Cyrus doesn't have the best feelings towards some of her old work, saying in a recent interview that she regrets writing a large portion of one of her albums. In a new episode of Sorry We're Cyrus, hosted by Miley's mom, Tish, and older sister, Brandy, Miley sat down and spoke about her new album, Something Beautiful, along with reflecting on her past career. At one point during the interview, the two hosts switch into a rapid-fire segment where they ask a list of quick questions, one of which reveals that Miley isn't so fond of her seventh studio album, Plastic Hearts. "Is there a song of yours you wish you didn't write?" Brandy asked. Yeah, Miley responded. "Do I say it? Half of Plastic Hearts, honestly." Both Brandy and Tish responded with loud gasps and said, "No." Miley continued, "Trauma response, trauma response." The album featured more rock-inspired songs from Miley, which came at a time when she was releasing covers of famous rock songs like Heart of Glass by Blondie and more. The album was released the same year that she and Liam Hemsworth finalized their divorce after nearly a decade together. Some of the album's songs, including High, are emotionally vulnerable and are rumored to be about her ex. It seems that Cyrus has some other regrets about the album beyond the trauma elicited by the lyrics, saying in another interview that she didn't think Dua Lipa's feature on the song Prisoner fit with the album. "That wasn't my idea, and no shade to Dua Lipa, it just isn't cohesive with the album," she said on the Every Single Album podcast. "She would have been much better on Endless Summer Vacation. She would have been great on Wild Card or River. Could you imagine?" On the flip side, Miley's mom asked her which song she wished she had wrote, to which she responded, "Half of Dolly Parton's catalog." "And Blondie, actually," Cyrus continued, "because Blondie is one of those sleepers where sometimes you're just listening to a whole record and you're like, that one, and that one, and that one." Miley Cyrus also reflected on her controversial Bangers era, along with sneaking out with sister Brandy to see the Jonas Brothers. Cyrus also spoke about mom Tish accidentally unfollowing her in May after Miley reunited with Billy Ray Cyrus. Both Tish and Miley said publicly that it had been a mistake, but Miley poked fun at Tish for the mysterious timing. "The timing was interesting," Miley said. "Like, I went to go see Billy Ray, and you mysteriously unfollowed me, Tish. And then you got some backlash, and then suddenly you knew how to press that follow button real quick." "I'm just kidding."
Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Paige Becker's underrated Nike sneakers are on sale for $80. This article was written by Ayana Ishmael on June 16th. Paige Becker's isn't just making waves in the WNBA. She's also reshaping what it means to be an athlete with her own sense of style. From the early stages of her career, we've seen the young athlete build out her own look, and her time in the league has been no different. In her June 13, 2025 game against the Las Vegas Aces, Beckers dropped 22 points and added 7 assists in a tightly contested matchup, showing flashes of the elite playmaking that made her a household name. But even before the game started, she had already captured our attention with the Nike sneakers she wore during warm-ups. The ombre purple sneaker had a fun flair to it that had us wondering where to purchase our own pair. We can confirm Beckers is wearing the Nike Book One Barely Grape / Lilac Bloom / Daybreak sneakers. ICYMI. The Book One is Devin Booker's first signature shoe with Nike, which debuted in late 2024. Per Nike, the shoe design features lifestyle aesthetics blended with performance functionality and partly draws inspiration from the classic Air Force One. Beckers paired the shoes with her Dallas Wings warm-up gear, but they would also translate well with an everyday street-style look. Drafted number one by the Dallas Wings in 2025, Paige Beckers stepped into the league with enormous expectations and hasn't disappointed. From her fashion moments while on the red carpet or in the court, she's a standout representation for this rookie class. Paige is more than just a basketball star. Her fashion sense has become a signature statement, and her beauty looks are even becoming popular trends. Beckers works closely with stylist Brittany Hampton and admits to being inspired by fashion-forward athletes like Russell Westbrook. Her hair evolution, from the iconic double braids during college to her slicked-back bun, has become one of the most talked-about things beyond her abilities on the court. She's even partnered with Madison Reed to perfect her iconic blonde shade. At just 23, Paige Beckers is already redefining what the modern athlete looks like, and we will be following along for all the hottest style and beauty tips and tricks. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.